God, does anybody see me pick my nose? I hope not. Hello, everyone.
I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It's Happy Hour Friday, or is economics on tap, as we like to call it. It's also the day before Halloween. And this right here is as close as I'm going to get to a work Halloween party. Kai is also in costume right now.
Sorry. That's just a little, it sounds a little sad.
It, well, you know, which, I mean, it's true. It's true. Oh, I know. Man. Kai is dressed up as Kai Rizdahl on Beer Day.
Kai Rizdahl. Yes. Kai Rizdahl, radio personality on Beer Day. That's what I got. Speaking of Beer Day, I have a new one. It's a new fave. From the Dust Bowl Brewing Company. Sorry. In Turlock, California. The Therapist Imperial IPA.
It's like,
come on.
I hate to say that is the most appropriate beer name.
I know.
Of 2020. Like,
it's
that's
really,
amazing.
Really good.
Did it exist before this crazy year?
Oh, yeah. No, it did. It's this brewery's been around since 2000-something. But it's yummy. And that's all I'll say.
Outstanding. I brought my new favorite thing, the porter, that also happens to have the Halloween-y label, Founders Porter. Lovely. Absolutely lovely. And, of course, those of you who are watching us now in the YouTube know that we're live on YouTube right now. And...
yes.
I was going to ask what everyone's drinking, but for some reason, everyone's talking about the hair and my costume.
Shockingly,
those of you who are listening to this later should know that 5 minutes before the show, I scampered upstairs to my costume box like every good mom has and dug out my Cruella de Vil wig and jacket. Because it's Halloween. Come on. We need something. We need something
up in
here.
Can I just say that there is the teensiest bit of love for me not dressing up on the comments. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So look,
the ABV
this is our
of mine,
deal.
By the way, what?
We appeal to everyone.
You dress up and I don't. That's right. That's right.
There's something for everyone in this show.
Yes. And what is going to be in the show today is a little bit of news, a little bit of commentary on the current state of affairs. I regret to inform you, by the way, I do not have a Make Me Smile. There was nothing that I did a couple of Rex Chapman videos, but that seemed a little too easy. So yeah. I'm going to wean myself off of those. But
I
note that you have two.
You could borrow
one with you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it goes. That's how it goes.
All right, I'm
going to climb right in and I will do my usual Friday thing, which is the early vote statistics, which are kind of amazing. I'm sure you've already heard this today since people have been picking up on this since we've been doing it for the past month. Harris County, Texas, one of the really big counties down there, has hit its 2016 total. The entire state of Texas is at 100.6% of its 2016 turnout. The state of Hawaii, 104.5%. I mean, it's kind of amazing who's turning out. Well, let me rephrase that. It's kind of amazing how many people are turning out. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. I'm so transfixed by this map and this trend.
I am too. And frankly, delighted to see Americans vote. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if nothing else, that's a good thing. That seems like good news.
Yeah.
Because it's our democracy to lose for sure.
Yep.
Now I'm geeking out about the mask, the map, the map.
9 million. I know. I got to get away from this map. Okay. Anyway, so my second item, if I may, since I started, so I might as well finish, is related in a way to the turnout. There was a piece in the Washington Post today. I believe it's today. And if not, doesn't matter, about the lived experience of Kamala Harris and what it will mean as she conceivably becomes the vice president of the United States. And it starts with an anecdote, and I'm just going to read it to you. Mm-hmm. At some point in Kamala Harris's life, somebody has instructed her to carry her keys like a weapon when she walks to her car. Someone has said, get them out of your purse before you leave the grocery store. Arrange them between your fingers, and if somebody attacks you, aim for the face. And that is a lived experience that Kamala Harris has and millions of women have, but that no vice president of the United States has ever had. And I know we talked in 2016 a lot about Hillary Clinton and this is going to sound sexist, but I don't mean it to. We talked a lot about how she looked, right, and what she wore, and how long it took her to do her makeup when she had to go out, and the fact that Trump only had to roll out of bed and throw on a tie and comb his hair or whatever. And it you know, and the time that that took. But I think this now has become a more substantive discussion of the differences in perspective and experience that women will bring. And I found this article really illuminating. And I know every woman out there is saying, of course, you moron. Could you be more male privileged? But look, you know, I'm trying. Anyway, I just read this piece. It's really good. Tony's going to put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're reading it. Hopefully no one's beating you up too much. It's good.
They will. And look, that's fair. You know?
Yeah.
I did an interview today. Sorry, a little tangent here. I did an interview today with a woman who had written an article for the Financial Times about what cities would look like if women designed them. And at some point in that piece, there was a line that just, it just smacked me. It was like, all of our cities for millennia have been designed by and for able-bodied men.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're like, oh my God, of course. Of course.
And our cars. And so we had a really good conversation about it.
Right. All that stuff. And you know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think like everybody arrives at knowledge at different times. I'm kind of fascinated by the concept of information delay overall. Like who arrives at what information and when. And this column feels like a piece of that information. And I think ultimately the only thing that matters is a willingness to take in the information as opposed to be like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't real, you know, or this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I have been seeing a lot of stories about how Kamala Harris, is being subject to, I mean, not just the willful and constant mispronunciation of her name, but also dramatically more disinformation than Mike Pence's. Like dramatically more personal disinformation and attacks. And like there is not a woman in America who isn't sitting there going, yeah, I know the reason.
Or the two reasons in her case. The two reasons. Did you see the 60 Minutes last week, the one that Trump walked out of, but they also had Biden and Harris on?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the amazing thing, and the only reason I saw this is because my 19-year-old son is actually a 70-year-old man and likes to watch 60 Minutes every weekend. Sorry. it's true. But anyway, so So Nora O'Donnell did the interview with Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris said, in essence, I'm going to bring a different perspective to the vice presidency and to this administration as I help Joe Biden govern the country when we win, she said. And Nora O'Donnell said with a straight face, is that a socialist or progressive agenda? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
I mean, that whole episode was like two men being taken seriously and one woman not being taken seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, look, the patriarchy is institutional, which is why it can also come from women. And in that case, it did. Like, I hate to, I hate to beat up on my former colleagues at CBS. But that was a pretty infuriating interview.
Yep.
All right, over to you.
What do you got?
Ironically, that's so funny because the three stories I brought all have one thing in common.
Three stories. So you have three stories and two makeup dolls. You got five, says the.
I missed yesterday, so I had like a lot to make up for.
Okay, fine.
I needed to get them all in there. So for the past couple of weeks, arguably since the Times started reporting on President Trump's tax returns, there has been a steady dribble at this late stage in the game of stories about corruption in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not least of which is the one from just yesterday about how apparently Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross stayed on the board of a Chinese joint venture.
Oh my God. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. While running the trade war. So, was deeply intertwined with the Chinese business. Yeah. There was also a remarkable story in the Washington Post on the 27th that just sort of went right by about how much money President Trump's companies have gotten paid over the last 4 years, up to and including charging United States taxpayers for, like, glasses of water. There was a story also yesterday about how essentially Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan was Recep Erdogan was like let off the hook in a bunch of different ways because the Trump administration, because President Trump had business interests in Turkey, and so on and so forth. So these are stories that are coming out now, and I have often said in the course of this administration, like, you know, it's not partisan to investigate corruption. It's been very interesting to me to watch the media, and I understand that this is like a tricky situation in which we find ourselves because we are that, and I will say we could have been doing it too for the last 4 years, right? There has been no end of stories that could have been written about corruption, self-dealing, and where taxpayer money went. I mean, the one that just blew my mind the other day was the one about the $250 million that was going to be spent on a basically pro-Trump propaganda campaign to defeat despair around the coronavirus, in which they created a McCarthy-esque blacklist of celebrities based on, among other things, whether or not they supported gay marriage. Like, taxpayer money funded a blacklist in which people were disqualified for supporting gay marriage. And it's just been very interesting to me. I guess the comment here is, like, I'm really... It's interesting to me to see these newspapers try to catch up on 4 years of corruption stories in the last 2 weeks before an election in which, in many states, more people have now already voted than voted in 2016. Like, this has been an entertainment presidency.
Yes. Mr. Talladay, if you would, please. That's so funny. I say it and it happens. Okay, I got nothing. You got two. Pick your best shot and let's hit it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go. I will say in very, very brief, good job, the New York Times, because they made this whole interactive thing for election stress relief. Like, oh, have you voted? Yes. Okay, here's some calming things and like puppies and like nature videos. It is delightful. I watched it bunch this morning. It's wonderful. But the best part is if you go and you say you're over 18 and you haven't voted, it just kicks you out. Subtle.
Oh, no.
And
yet really?
Effective. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It should give a little 404 that says, you suck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, get after it. Get after it. And then thank you to science, because science has done the work. In a study published yesterday in the journal M Systems, researchers at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine and San Diego State University analyzed the viral load of COVID, of coronavirus on Halloween candy. They got a bunch of people who were sick with COVID-19 to handle a bunch of candy to find out if it was going to be safe.
Lick the candies? Ew, shut up. No.
Lick it. No, put it in a bowl and then see what happened. Okay. And they were like, look, as with everything in life, the risk is not zero. But if you wash your hands before you handle the candy, and then when you take the candy home, you give it a little wipe ski, the risk is very low. Virus was detected on only 10% of candies handled after hand washing. So everyone who's going to put out candy in a bowl on their sidewalk away from the front door, like I'm going to, wash your hands first.
Yep.
Anyway, I appreciated the attempts of science to save Halloween for at least some children.
Look, honestly, it's at this point, science is going to save us because we're clearly not going to save ourselves. That's all I got. That's all I got.
Jeez, man, this is the make me smile part.
No, it's good. No, it's good. It was good. It was good. It was good. It was good. All right. That's it. We're done.
Okay.
Cruella de Vil is
going to
go somewhere and whatever. Back next week is what we are.
Thank you, Yoda.
In the meanwhile, send your answers to Make Me Smart. No, send your answers to the Make Me Smart question, which is, of course, as a reminder, what is something you thought you knew but later found out you were wrong about? Email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Voicemails preferred. Emails accepted.
Emails accepted.
I'm just, you know, because we have to. you know.
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, they're good too. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethko produces video with the help of video intern extraordinaire Ethan Peretz, who would never lick the candy. And Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device. She finds all the good stories.
Ben Tolliday actually made things happen today down in the studio in Los Angeles. He composed our theme music with Daniel Ramirez. The senior producer for today, because Donna Tam is off and Bridget is on maternity leave, take your pick. Anyways, Tara Nieves, she's running things. That's what I got.
She's like, what have I done?
Tara Nieves is in charge.
Why is there a wig? Why did we talk about the media? Get me out of here.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.